I Hate Politics is a podcast about a human activity we love to hate. I'm Marcus Batchelor, sitting in for Sunil Dasgupta. And in today's installment of the Chocolate City Mixtape, we're talking to Murari Jarima. He's a DC native, an activist, and the director of the award-winning 2020 film Residue, about one man's reckoning with gentrification and displacement in the nation's capital. We talked to him about his family's deep roots in arts and activism here in D.C., about his D.C. story that drove him to write Residue, and about the threats, both internal and external, still threatening Chocolate City today. Check it out and let me know what you think. Murari Jarima, welcome to the Chocolate City Mixtape on I Hate Politics. Thanks for coming.
Thanks for having me, brother.
So your roots in D.C. run deep, both your native roots, but also your roots in D.C. activism. You obviously follow in the footsteps of another great filmmaker with the same last name. So just give us a little bit about your background.
Yeah, so I grew up in Eckington, North Capitol on Q Street. My parents have been here since the 70s. My dad came to teach at Howard University. He taught film at Howard for about 40 years. My mother's from Detroit. She came out here to study film and just kind of has become a fixture in the community. They opened Sankofa Bookstore on Georgia Avenue, right across the street from Howard University back in, 97? And so right now they're one of the, longest running, remaining Black businesses in the city. And they've, been fighting a pretty well-known battle against gentrification in the city. The city came out to defend them, when the bookstore and the whole building almost succumbed to, property taxes, like so many other folks in the city. People came down to City Hall, to fight for Sankofa and to make it clear that this institution has to be, protected. And so we were able to win a tax abatement, because of that. I went to film school out in LA, made, my first feature film called Residue. It came out in 2020. And Residue was about gentrification in Washington, D.C., pretty autobiographical way. It did pretty good. Had a nice life, in the middle of the pandemic, thanks to Ray, Ava DuVernay's distribution company. In a space where Black distribution companies don't really exist. And for those in the film industry who know, distribution is, that's the hard part. Making the film is incredibly difficult, but compared to the struggle to distribute it and get it seen, it's a cakewalk, And so, yeah, we got lucky with that.
Yeah, for sure. And I definitely want to get into Residue and what that work has meant in the conversation. You talked about the Sankofa Bookstore, which is an institution in the District of Columbia. It's a mainstay on Georgia Avenue. And obviously a gathering space for so much important movement work in the city. Also want to talk just a bit more about your dad and the Sankofa of a Different Name, which was his 1993 film. So you said in previous interviews that you didn't necessarily go out to follow in the family business, but obviously all of this work that your parents were doing, I'm sure had an impact on you. So how did your dad's body of work, as you were seeing it develop as you were growing up, both influence your worldview, your view of your DC community of Chocolate City, but then also in the end, how did it influence how your work in the film industry kind of manifested itself?
Yeah, Sankofa was a another independent project, like the bookstore. My parents are all about independence, particularly for Black folks. So they made the film with very little money, but fortunately a lot of control over the narrative. And so if you compare Sankofa to other films about slavery, it stands in stark contrast in its insistence on making it about Africans' agency within stories about Africans and their agency not to just exist, but to fight and to revolt, and to do what has to be done for their freedom. And so it's unique in that regard because it wasn't left up to liberal white folks to do their thing with it. But because of that, they paid a high price. They weren't able to find normal means of distribution, within the system itself, even after having won awards all over the country, all over the world at the biggest film festivals, and they came back home basically to a desert, in terms of their ability to distribute. So they decided to distribute it themselves. And so basically opened up a whole nother historic chapter in Black independent filmmaking where they were able to walk this film, you know, quite literally walk the film across the country. When I was a kid, I remember just going from screenings from DC, Baltimore, Philly, New York, you know, people supporting it, going to different screenings to talk to the audience, you know, Q&As after each screening, day in, day out, day in, day out. Me and my siblings passing out flyers at every convention, expo, every Georgia Avenue day. And, you know, in this style, basically this Sankofa family system developed where Black people from every city, you know, would reach out to say, you know, we want to bring the film here. And so we'll rent out a theater so that we can show this film here because we know white folks ain't going to do it. And just like that, you know, the community took it up, you know, in this really incredible grassroots process of distribution, you know, the likes of which I haven't seen, you know what I'm saying, since. Which, you know, inspired people like Ava DuVernay, who's full blown in the distribution game right now. So they brought that level of independence to put in a bookstore as well. And basically everything they do, they rely on community power to do it.
Yeah. And in terms of all of the work that your family's been able to do, creating spaces like Sankofa, making films, and then your work, how has that backdrop of Chocolate City been influential and maybe even enabling to that type of work?
Yeah, it was decisive. One thing I left out about this distribution of Sankofa was the fact that when they got back to D.C. after taking it around the planet, Film Festival, and couldn't find distribution, they came back to the city and was just like, we're tired. We've tried our best. We've made the film. It took years to create and we ain't got no gas left in the tank. And so their friends within the DC community, folks like Acklin Lynch, you know, monument in DC history, he's an organizer from back in the day and one of our great portions of the DC creative and intellectual Black Brain Trust. He and others gathered a bunch of other, you know, Black folks in DC, showed the film and was like, look, you know, they did their part. They made the film and now it's on us if we want to get it seen. To make that happen. And so they were the first ones to put together this system where they rent out this movie theater. It was the Avalon Theater up in Northwest. And it was sold out, you know what I'm saying, for weeks and weeks and weeks. Church grandmas bussing whole churches down from B-More in Philly, you know, until they then created their own in, you know, B-More in Philly to show it up there. The Black DC community has been foundational to everything that my parents have been able to pull off before Sankofa and since. And then for me, Residue is about the neighborhood I grew up in, like I said, Eckington. And not only that, the production of it, we shot it in Eckington, in the houses of the people I grew up with the people I grew up with in front of and behind the camera, with their children, you know, acting in the film, you know, in playing the parts of our generation, you know, of their parents' mm-hmm. generation. Not only that, many of the other locations, you know, from Zendavich, you know, the Ethiopian restaurant that used to be down there on Florida Avenue, yep. to all these other places that are no longer here in D.C., you know, are in the film and created the backdrop of this. So obviously, like, D.C. is the soil from which we emerge, me and my parents as well.
Yeah, for sure. Let's dive into Residue. It came out in 2020, distributed by Ava DuVernay's Array, which is huge. Ended up on Netflix. Really incredible critical reception. So congratulations on all the recognitions and awards that are well deserved. A drama in a way, but I think it feels, and I think you've described it in some ways as a documentary. And I think I've also read or listened to other interviews where you described even developing Residue as a race against time, feeling the pressure to really capture what you felt was left of Chocolate City before it was too late. So can you describe coming home after a brief stint away from DC, kind of what the protagonist in the film is doing as well, returning home, looking to write this film and trying to process what's left of what they remember of the city that they grew up in. So yeah, can you give us a window into why you felt at the time that you were developing Residue that that the urgency was there to do it?
Yeah, I mean, I went to film school in 2015 and then I came back the summer of 2016. So, and even within that 1 year, just kind of coming back, I remember I had a couple of friends I brought back with me from LA. I was like, I show them around and shit. And I couldn't. I was like, I was on 9th Street. I was trying to show them around Georgia Avenue and 9th U Street. And I didn't know where the hell I was. I couldn't even give us directions because I didn't know which way was up. And it was such a disorienting experience, in addition to many other experiences where white folks gentrifying was being so sassy, bro. And I was just like, what the fuck is going on here? Sorry for my language, but just to keep it a buck, that was when I started writing Residue. It was, to create a virtual space in which I could, be as, angry as I wanted to be. Early drafts of the script was really just, an excuse to, have a white boy beaten up, on screen, for just being a gentrifier. And, of course, like as time went on, as I developed the story, it started to pull in more substantial and important aspects of my life, such as, the people who I had lost connections to over longer periods of time that I hadn't really connected to gentrification. But of course it is, because gentrification is not only the moment that you get pushed out your city, it's also the decades of economic divestment from communities that suck them dry to create a better investment environment for the real estate interests. It's the decades of relentless police violence, in the name of, attracting white folks to the city to make them feel safe. It's also the intensification of incarceration, the letting of infrastructure to bring in so-called returning citizens and setting them up for another round in prison. Yeah, it's the destruction of a public school system, like all those things are part of gentrification, at a certain point my script matured beyond just kind of my anger at individual white folks and became more so about something that I think a lot of people feel without being able to put a name to it, about this kind of atomization of our communities.
Yeah, for sure. There's definitely resonant themes in the film just around like the sense of loss, the sense of isolation that gentrification can elicit, and the hard place that individuals and communities are left in when that happens so quickly. And I think that's such an important theme to capture. You frequently talk about just the sights and sounds you attempted to capture, right? The music playing on the street, those facets of life that don't exist in a lot of communities anymore that felt familiar. Can you talk a little bit more about how, parallel to this story of loss and isolation, you also tried to make the film a celebration about what was best in the city?
Yeah, there was a part about it that felt like, kind of butterfly chasing, like capturing different aspects of the culture that I thought may not survive, another 10 years or so, such as the way a neighborhood sounds, for example, when everybody is out on the stoop. I think it's still pockets in D.C., that kind of that vibe, but it's absolutely whole swaths of the city that no longer have it, such as my neighborhood. Mama Hasnatu, rest in peace to her. She was a staple in the community across the city. She blessed the film. She played the grandmother of Delonte in the film, and we shot over 2 summers. We had to come back the second summer for more stuff, but she passed away in between filming. Her death was an incredible surprise to us. And so there's a scene in there where, an argument was supposed to have taken place between her and her grandson, and we didn't have her. So we had to basically record it just with the grandson and kind of make it whispered so that you can kind of feel like she's there without actually hearing her. We recorded that conversation with her the first summer, and I lost the recording. That's one of the main reasons why I came back the second summer, was to get it again. And she had passed away. And so in the end, is able to tell not 100%, but maybe like 50% of the story. And it leaves a lot of space for somebody else to come around and do more of that, to fill in more of the gap.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, thank you for your contribution to, I think, what should be a quilt of stories about the diversity of DC experiences we have. I've seen the film. It resonates with me as a DC native, and appreciated seeing a film about us on Netflix, on the international stage, being recognized, being awarded for its resonance with a global audience was really important. So again, thank you for that. And want to talk a little bit about the activism on top of your art. I think your art has been activism, but your IG bio says being an artist is not enough. And so you've also leaned in other ways to both fight for local autonomy, to keep DC chocolate, to fight for the culture and the people who make it real. 5 years since Residue, the effort to erase Black culture, erase Black people from DC has only gotten more aggressive, both from a lot of the internal forces you talked about, but also by virtue of Trump's White House, these external forces also applying extra pressure. And you've leaned in, including joining a coalition called DC Against Trump. So tell us a little bit more about what you've been doing since Residue to expand your activism, and then how this moment in DC's history provoked you to lean into this more direct effort against the president.
Yeah, I mean, you know, films can do a lot, culturally speaking, but there's not much that they can do often in concrete ways. You know, the issues that it presents are still present in my community and in DC more broadly. And so without taking away from what it's able to do, I also felt a little bit of a gap in terms of the things that I want for my people and what I was able to do as a filmmaker. It was never really enough for me to get on just being a filmmaker and kind of, you know, hoping that my films have some type of effect. I need to see results, you know what I'm saying? And so that was always a thing that bothered me. And then 2020 popped off. And I was in Chicago at the time. And Chicago had some massive, you know, mobilizations against the murder of George Floyd. So being in one of these arenas of struggle during the George Floyd rebellion, with these feelings of art being insufficient, I was wide open for organizing at that point. So I started joining in. I got involved with the Chicago Alliance Against Racist and Political Repression, or the Chicago chapter, the National Alliance. Started organizing around police crimes. Chicago is the capital of wrongful convictions and police torture. So there's hundreds and hundreds of folks who are still fighting for justice around that type of stuff. And so that's the type of work that I'm, you know, involved in Chicago. And then now, of course, with this Trump situation, you know, it's kind of a natural kind of extension. I've been in DC for a couple months helping my dad finish one of his films. We have a chapter out here that I get involved with when I'm in the city, DC Alliance Against Racist and Political Oppression. So when Trump made the announcement of, you know, the federal takeover, I happened to be here. So we had to get to work doing what, you know, our organization, you know, was basically built to do. Once, you know, they started bringing in feds and troops and all that kind of stuff, we started to build this coalition against the Trump agenda. And within a couple of weeks, we had our first action, very successful, targeting you know, these racist curfew zones. Our first one being at 14th and U. We had an incredible turnout. You know, it was clear that, like, people want to fight. They don't want to just kind of sit around when they're being attacked, when their communities are being attacked. And so it was just more fuel for us to continue to build out this vehicle, you know, for mass mm-hmm. mobilizations. And so we've had a bunch of cool stuff pop off, you know, and, you know, we're learning every day, we're growing every day, and we're continuing to build basically the only thing that can stop Trump. Not this coalition per se, but broadly a movement where everybody is united against this kind of existential threat that they present. You know, like they say, when the Nazis come to town, you set aside your differences and you fight the Nazis. And basically what that means is we have to do everything that we can, you know, to unite as many people as we can. And the coalition is one of those things helping to, you know, along with the whole ecosystem of other formations, do that one thing. And after we deal with that, we can worry about these ideological differences. I just wanted to bring it back to one part of your question, which is the whole art situation. I'm very clear, you know, on the role of art now. And for me, I say that I'm an organizer first and an artist second, because from the get-go, Residue, all those kinds of things, these are works of art intended to help transform society. That's my goal. I don't want to just create art that just observes society as is without pushing for transformation. And so in that way, it's an extension of, you know, my organizing. And the more that I organize in collective ways, the more I can put myself in a position of a day in, day out practice, which enables me to create art that is more relevant to the things that people are fighting for and against in their, you know, day, including myself, you know, in their day-to-day lives. Because typically what we're taught is to be individual artists, you know, making things that just we think of with that have very little to do with the world around us. And we isolate ourselves and we're kind of just pushing, you know, grinding for money. And so we put ourselves in a position where that type of art flows forth. I want to put myself in a position where a different type of art flows for. And so to do that is the foremost aspect of my art making.
Yeah, powerful message, I think, to all the artists right now is that we've all got to extend ourselves and figure out how we use our art to start conversations, but also how we extend beyond what we think our contributions are and do more, which is a perfect call to action for other artists and for anybody thinking about what they have to do in this moment. And so I want to thank you, one, for the time that you've given to this conversation. And I want to end on a lighter note. This is called the Chocolate City Mixtape. So at the end of every conversation, I just want to get my guest mixtape, which is just rapid fire responses to five different questions at the end of each segment. So we ready? Favorite DC restaurant, past or present?
Favorite DC restaurant? Oh, shit. I mean, current right now is a restaurant, you know, I think best Ethiopian food in town, CHER on 9th Street. They just opened one on 14th. Gotta shout them out.
Bet. All right. Favorite go-go band?
Favorite. Goddamn.
We won't start any conflicts, but.
I mean, I Black Alley held me down and I love their music. You know, they you know, yeah. Black Alley and CCB. Definitely Black Alley and CCB. Right.
Yes. DC location that still feels like home.
Still feels like home. That's a good ass question. I would say Bennett Road. Still feels like home. Yeah, over there by the shrimp boat. Yeah.
Well, I agree. Yeah.
Yeah.
A DC native living or dead that inspires you.
I would say my OG that's locked up. His name is, we call him Peanut, Wayne Gaffney. There's a character in the film based off of him. From my earliest memories, he was teaching me things. How to climb trees, how to do kung fu, how to do, you know, all kinds of wild shit. And he was just basically my sibling, you know, my older brother. And my parents had helped raise him before I was born, you know. And, you know, despite all that, growing up, he was, you know, always in conflict with the system, and they couldn't see these beautiful things about him. So he's somebody who's currently locked up, looking at a lot of time. We fighting to get him out, but still we talk all the time. He continues to inspire me. You know what I mean? He's focused. He's very much a fighter, very much still a beautiful, you know, human being inside and out, you know? So I definitely got to shout him out. Dwayne Gaffney, Peanut. Yeah.
Love that. And last question. One thing the person listening to this podcast right now can do today to help save Chocolate City?
Join an organization, get involved. Join an organization feels like too much of a commitment right now. Put one action on your calendar that you will attend.
Love that. Get active, y'all. Find your community and get active. Morari, thank you so much for joining, brother. Thank you again for your activism, for your artistry, and for always being a voice for truth. And again, thanks for coming on the Chocolate City Mixtape. That's it for this episode of the Chocolate City Mixtape on the I Hate Politics podcast. Be sure to tune in on Tuesday mornings for our news analysis. The I Hate Politics podcast is produced by Sunil Dasgupta with the support of University of Maryland, Baltimore County. Chocolate City Mixtape is hosted and co-produced by me, Marcus Batchelor. Make sure to like and subscribe wherever you get your podcasts for politics close to you and your home. Thanks.